Chapter 2. Contradictions. Just a few words by way of introduction. Many millennia ago, when our ancestors were living in the Stone Age, a giant mother spaceship was circling our planet. Smaller shuttles went down to Earth. The group of ETs acted like ethnologists. They studied some tribes, diligently learned the languages, gave human beings tips and instructions for a regulated future, and finally took leave again with the promise to return in the far distant future. This became the starting point for religions on Earth. Our ancestors had classed the strangers as gods. These thoughts are not speculation, no kind of hypothesis or any other kind of theory. They can be proven. Everyone who takes the trouble to study the material reaches the same conclusion. Those who want to know about it. The consequences of that prehistoric visit affect all of us. Our religions, political systems, ideologies, what we are as human beings, and our present as much as our future. As an insider, as an old hand and author of 40 books on the subject, I am just as familiar with the unanswered questions as the critics are. For the latter, the contradictions appear obvious, problematic, and insurmountable. For those in the know, everything has its compelling logic, including those things that appear to be impossible. Are there extraterrestrials at all? What do they look like? Why do they look like human beings? What technology enabled them to bridge the light years? What did they actually want here? Why, given the billions of available planets, did they come just here to Earth? And why did they do so precisely at this point in the course of earthly evolution? Why did they leave their home? What do the ETs gain from contact with us? Do they want to exploit us? Why don't they kill humanity off? And why don't they reveal themselves to the general public? Why play games of hide-and-seek? These are all justified questions. And to each one, without exception, there is a logical answer. In the meantime, the ETs have started influencing human beings again. I contend that the extraterrestrials were not only here millennia ago, they are here again. They are here now and have been for decades. The Earth is being observed, studied, and analyzed, and there is contact between the ETs and individual groups of people. Totally insane? I am certain about this. Sometimes totally unfamiliar objects pass soundlessly through our airspace, displaying flight characteristics which we cannot imitate with the technical means at our disposal. Denis Leyti, French Air Force Major General and recipient of the Order of the Legion of Honor. I was a first lieutenant at the Maelstrom Air Force Base in Montana, USA on 24 March 1967. A UFO hovering above the base had deactivated 10 intercontinental missiles. They all became inoperative. First Lieutenant Robert Salas, April 2015, lecture in Sindelfingen Town Hall. During my time as an Air Force attaché in England, I came to the conclusion that something was happening in the skies of our world about which we had no idea. In general, I am convinced that UFOs exist and are a reality. Ricardo Bermudez Sangüesa, retired General of the Chilean Air Force and Director of the Technical College for Aeronautics. No institution has the right to block disputes, and that includes the study of unidentified flying objects. José Carlos Pereira, Commander-in-Chief of the Brazilian Air Force. On the evening of March 3, 1997, during my second term of office as Governor of Arizona, I experienced something between 8 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. which was contrary to all logic and called my view of the world into question. A huge, delta-shaped aircraft flying soundlessly over Squaw Peak in the Phoenix Mountain Preserve. It wasn't an apparition, but an enormous, solid body whose distinctive leading edge was lined with spotlights and which was crossing the skies across Arizona. As a pilot and former Air Force officer, I can say with certainty that there was no similarity with any object built by human hand familiar to me. Fife Symington III, Republican Governor of Arizona from 1991 to 1997. At least four different species of aliens have been visiting Earth for thousands of years. Some of the extraterrestrials look like us and could walk down the street without anyone noticing. Paul Theodore Hellyer, former Defense Minister of Canada and 22-year member of the Canadian Cabinet. There is no longer any doubt about the objective reality of undefined aerial phenomena, better known as UFOs. The climate of mistrust and disinformation, not to mention ridicule, displays a surprising form of intellectual blindness. Yves Cihar, former Director General of the French aerospace agency, CNES. We are participants in a universe which is teeming with intelligent forms of life from which we have cut ourselves off. Professor John Mack, Harvard University. We already have the possibility of flying to the stars. Whatever you can imagine, we know how it works. We have the technology to bring ET home. No, it will not require a lifetime to do it. We know how it works. We could have the opportunity to fly to the stars. Dr. Benjamin Robert Rich, U.S. aircraft designer and second director of the Lockheed Skunk Works, California, 1975 to 1991. Skunk Works is Lockheed's secret research development. The stealth bomber was developed there. This statement was made on March 23, 1993, at the School of Engineering Alumni Association. I and some others had the privilege to be officially informed that our planet has already been visited by extraterrestrials and that the UFO phenomenon is real. Dr. Edgar Dean Mitchell, U.S. astronaut, captain of Apollo 14, and the sixth human being on the moon. There is hardly any doubt that some unidentified flying objects are real, three-dimensional, massive objects existing physically and observable. Their material nature is proven in that they have been logged by various sensor systems. Colonel Dr. John B. Alexander, former project leader at Los Alamos National Laboratory and the National Research Council. With this selection of quotes, there are hundreds more. It should have become clear, even to the most skeptical of skeptics. We are no longer alone. We might not like it. We might want to scream, curse, repress it, refuse to acknowledge it, complain about it, whine, or let our jaw drop. We are no longer alone. Science and rational people will probably look for alternatives, for logical explanations in order to categorize the impossible. This is of no use. We are no longer alone. Every one of the witnesses quoted is a person aware of their responsibilities, and each one knows why they said something. Why did these men do what they did? They want to protect humankind from a shock. They want to introduce the new findings gradually to society. And some of these courageous personalities know more than they are saying because they have had dialogue with the extraterrestrials and have asked them about their reasons. They wanted to know why the aliens have not assailed us despite their technical superiority, why they did not reveal themselves over a sold-out football match, and why they have any understanding for us humans. After all, we don't display any understanding for a colony of ants. I do not intend to discuss, again, the general question as to whether or not there is extraterrestrial life at all. Every reasonable person knows we are not alone in the universe. Furthermore, it may be swarming with unimagined life forms, but also with life forms similar to humans. This idea arises from the panspermia theory of the Swedish Nobel Prize winner Svante Arrhenius, 1859 to 1927. I have already written about it. And Earth-like planets, not too hot and not too cold. NASA calculates that there are 4.5 billion such worlds in our Milky Way alone. Extrapolations from measurements of the Kepler Space Telescope expand to 17 billion Earth-like planets. What do the aliens want here? How do they know about our world at all? We are their scions. The gods created human beings in their image. Sudden, unannounced contact between ETs and our society would be a disaster, primarily for us, but possibly also for the aliens. A science author writing under the pseudonym Claudio Stella says in this respect, if the probable consequences of contact are war between states, if it therefore leads to death and destruction, there is a lot to be said for not establishing contact. Why should the ETs be bothered at all about what happens on Earth? What concern of theirs are wars between humans, human feelings, behavior, politics, and religions? The counter-question is, what benefit would extraterrestrials have from a broken Earth, from billions of dead, from destroyed industries? The answer is our raw materials. Ha! An extraterrestrial species would not mine its minerals, ores, and gold on an inhabited planet. Raw materials are available for free, without war and death, on the uninhabited planets of every solar system, in ours, on the Moon, Mars, and not to mention the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. There, on the mini-planet Ceres, for example, the raw materials are available in pure form. Robots can mine them without the presence of disruptive life forms, without horrible thunderclouds, and without payment. Why should ETs go in for a war on Earth, make themselves hated, and have to deal with acts of sabotage even after a victory, when it can be done much more simply? The extraterrestrials were never concerned with raw materials. Every solar system is full of them. Why, then, is there no direct contact with us? Steady on. There are, in fact, connections with individual groups on Earth. I will get to that. But what is absent is the global presence, the impressive, awe-inspiring public appearance. With whom should the ETs sit down? With the despot of an underdeveloped state who only thinks of their own advantage and does not understand anything about science and technology? With the corrupt rulers of developing countries? What would be the benefit of such contact for the ETs? No contact, then, with fools, but with the leaders of a progressive technological society. On Earth, with the Americans, the Russians, the French or Chinese. Every nation contacted would immediately try to draw some benefit for itself from the information obtained from the extraterrestrials. It would want to gain an advantage over the others. This is the breeding ground of jealousy about the technical superiority of the other and fear of possible subjugation. So, should the extraterrestrials reveal themselves to all nations at the same time, circle around the globe in huge spaceships and appear over golf courses and Olympic stadiums, plug themselves into the global TV network? Our reaction would be terrible. The Pope would announce that the ETs were the devil's spawn, the Antichrist, and we Christians must never listen to them. The aliens have come to exploit us, to enslave and destroy us, as had already been proclaimed by the Apostle John in his Apocalypse. Things would be no better with the Grand Mufti in Islam or the Chief Rabbi in Jerusalem. The visit of the extraterrestrials would cause all the princes of the different religions to lose their power. A careless word from an ET, for example, that God did not have a son, or that there was no original sin, and thus no reason for Christ to have died on the cross, would transform the belief in Christianity into a madhouse. An extraterrestrial explains in a TV interview that Muhammad, the founder of Islam, did not write a single word of the Quran himself. He had been uneducated and illiterate, and all the verses of the Quran had been invented by scholars at a later time. As a consequence, millions of devout Muslims would be lost. A life of prayer, suffering, and hard work for a lie. Life would have lost its meaning. In Jerusalem, an extraterrestrial, with a friendly smile, explains to his Jewish interviewer that the God of the Torah who spoke to Moses, who had descended to the holy mountain in fire and brimstone, had only been an extraterrestrial, one of their ancestors who had visited Earth thousands of years ago. Yahweh an ET? A religion, exceptionally well sold for thousands of years, nothing but intellectual nonsense? Based on a misunderstanding of technically illiterate forebears, That cannot be serious. The God of the Old Testament and extraterrestrial? The Jewish community misled for over 5,000 years? In a debate with the participation of ETs, an anthropologist insists that evolution was a secure part of the scientific worldview. But the ET on the panel explains, evolution, yes, but there's more. Earth was never a closed system. Our forebears intervened in the human genome on several occasions. For the Darwinists on Earth, and this really applies to the whole of the academic world, a scientifically well-founded building collapses. Are none of the things true that we human beings have acquired through hard and thorough work? The physicist comments that Albert Einstein had calculated as clear as daylight that nothing was faster than the speed of light. Faster was impossible, because when the speed of light is reached, mass becomes infinite. But the amiable ET next to him, with his constant smile, contradicts him with a gentle, resonant voice. Einstein was right, but only in your physical system. There are systems in which Einstein's physics no longer applies. How do you imagine we got here? With liquid propellant rocket power? As reasonable beings, centuries ahead of Earth technology, the ETs will not intervene in our lives without gentle preparation. Preparation? How? On October 13, 1917, the aliens demonstrated their presence before 75,000 Earthlings in the small Portuguese village of Fatima, disguised as a religious apparition. At the time, they delivered a message addressed to the highest representative of the Earth, with the request to publish this message in 1960, 43 years after the show in the firmament. The message ended up in the Vatican. All popes to the present day have refused to make the content of the so-called Third Secret of Fatima accessible to the public, although the message was actually supposed to come from the alleged Mother of God, who is likely to know what she can expect of her highest religious representative on Earth. Subsequently, false messages were published and falsehoods produced by Vatican circles. I have scrupulously exposed the whole tissue of lies in my book, The Gods Were Astronauts. Either way, visitors can still admire the marvelous stained glass window depicting the so-called Miracle of the Son of Fatima in the magnificent Basilica of Fatima. The popes refused to make the message of Fatima publicly accessible. Period. Would it not be high time for the extraterrestrials to protest and intervene? Clearly, that has not happened. Not in 1960, nor later. Why not? Because the ETs know our politics, our religions, our whole social system, and furthermore, do not have the slightest interest in throwing Earth into turmoil. That starts with simple self-interest. A broken planet with millions of angry, disappointed people is of no use to them at all. So they continued to show patience with these fractious beings and gentle preparation for the official contact. The popes, of course, know about this. Since 1960, at the latest, each one of them knows the truth. Each one of them knows about that contact on October 13, 1917, and each one of them knows that the truth is inexorably approaching, day for day, year for year. It comes as no surprise to me at all that His Holiness Pope John XXIII, 1958 to 1963, who read the message of Fatima in 1960, died of grief and sorrow. The next pontiff, Pope John Paul V, 1963 to 1978, traveled the world and likely informed all the princes of the different religions about the ETs and the inexorably approaching Judgment Day of Knowledge. And here it fits the mold perfectly that the next pope, John Paul I, could no longer bear the untruth and went to pieces. Even before his election, the future pope had detailed discussions with the nun Lucia, the same Sister Lucia who was the former girl of Fatima. The pope's brother, Eduardo Luciani, reported that after the conversation with Sister Lucia, his brother, the future Pope, had been completely devastated. He exercised his difficult office a mere 33 days. There was subsequently speculation that the Pope had been murdered, presumably because he had found out about some corrupt dealings in the Vatican's banking business. And what if things were completely different? After all, the Pope knew the truth about Fatima from Sister Lucia. He knew that it had not been the Mother of God who had been revealed there, but an extraterrestrial. Did he discuss this fact with high dignitaries? Did he intend to publish it? Was this his death sentence? The fact remains, John Paul I was in office a miserly 33 days. The next pope, John Paul II, exercised his office from 1978 to 2005. He is seen as the apostle who traveled the world. In each country that he visited, he first kissed the ground. A symbolic act? Or did he want to symbolize that this land still belongs to us, Earth citizens? Finally, there was Benedict XVI, the first German pope, in office from 2005 to 2013. On February 28, 2013, he retired from his office, which was a unique event in the 1,900-year history of the papacy. The highest church dignitary, the successor to the throne of St. Peter, couldn't be bothered anymore. Oh yes, their holinesses know what is going on. And science? There is just a very small group that is in the know, and it has undertaken not to go public. Why, for God's sake, why all this stupid secrecy? Imagine an individual astrophysicist was contacted by an extraterrestrial somehow. What is the man supposed to do now? Call a scientific conference and inform his colleagues? They would declare him to be insane, and if he could prove his contact, perhaps through a gift from the ETs that convinces all those present, now the responsibility of the scientific community kicks in. Every astrophysicist and every astronomer is a highly educated person. Each one of them knows our social system, knows about religion and politics. Each one can imagine the reaction of people. It is clear immediately to each one of the scientists present that humanity is not yet ready for this explosive message. They impose self-censorship on themselves. And this can be proved. Each year, a SETI conference takes place somewhere in the world under the auspices of the International Academy of Astronautics, the IAA. SETI stands for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. As long ago as the 1989 SETI conference, the scientists involved decided to introduce self-censorship that would apply to all astronomers and astrophysicists. The Declaration of Principles Concerning Activities Following the Detection of Extraterrestrial Intelligence. This declaration sets out how scientists must act in the face of an extraterrestrial intelligence. 1. Any individual, public or private research institution, or governmental agency that believes it has detected a signal from or other evidence of extraterrestrial life should seek to verify that the most plausible explanation for the evidence is the existence of extraterrestrial intelligence before making any public announcement. 2. Prior to making any public announcement that evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence has been detected, the discoverer should promptly inform all other observers or research organizations that are parties to this declaration. Parties to this declaration should not make any public announcement of this information. 3. Should credible evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence be discovered, an international committee of scientists and other experts should be established. Understood? Even a scientist, be they ever so high in their profession, and indeed be able to present concrete evidence for their contact with an ET, may not go public with it. First, everything has to wend its sluggish way through the commissions. There, the decision is taken as to whether people are ready for an extraterrestrial message. But what if a scientist goes off script, doesn't care one jot about the declaration. They might call a press conference, and that would be the end of them. Their own colleagues will stab them in the back. They will have broken the supreme command, "Thou shalt not go public," and the media will not take what they say seriously, just as they do not take seriously the statements of the personalities quoted earlier. All nations with the technological capability engage in astronomy. They not only observe the heavens, but also search for signals from ETs. Whole forests of parabolic antennas are pointed at the sky. Sensors have been fired into space, and robots landed on the surface of Mars. As I am typing these lines, the space probe Dawn is orbiting the planet Ceres in the asteroid belt and is supplying sensational pictures. Pictures, by the way, that also show a mountain with strange white and black stripes and a large rectangle on the ground. It could not be clearer that these are not natural phenomena. Astronomers are desperately seeking a natural explanation for them, but they might equally be traces of mining. At some point, a group of ETs mined raw materials on Ceres. This thought is not allowed to be presented in public, at least not by any serious astronomer. And in general, these are very clever and thoroughly honest people. Should the highly important astronomical authority of this world be ambushed and told that all its endeavors in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence had been superfluous? The billions spent on parabolic antennas, spacecraft, and robots had been wasted taxpayers' money? Its scientific research down the drain because the ETs were already here? Here, in the solar system, and even on Earth? How should a brilliant astrophysicist like Stephen Hawking, who is looking for extraterrestrial life, together with the billionaire Yuri Milner, react? Hawking and Milner started a $100 million program in April 2016 to search for life in space. A huge sum spent for no purpose? I can imagine that Stephen Hawking has no wish to know anything about UFOs or any ETs on Earth until he is contacted personally. Slowly, even skeptics must realize that not just the public in general, but science as well, must be protected from the appearance of ETs. Science requires censorship as much as the trusting mass of the people. How, then, to proceed despite the evident facts? Claudio Stella, the thorough thinker about contact with ETs, proposes a long preparatory period. If the adjustment takes place in a distanced, critical, deliberate, and slow way, then there need be less fear of a cultural shock extending as far as the loss of our own cultural orientation and the resulting terrible consequences. According to his analysis, it would be wise on the part of the ETs to use a preparatory period in advance of the great event. Because such processes can take an irrational course, it may be advisable for the ETs to prepare the Earth mentally, culturally, politically, and organizationally for their arrival through direct advance notification. Various forms of advance notice could be used for such a careful, hardly shocking first contact. A technical artifact which can clearly be ascribed to an extraterrestrial civilization might appear, for example, to prepare humankind. We are in the middle of this preparatory process, and very few citizens of the Earth have any inkling of it. Mental and cultural adjustment? For decades, the science fiction films coming out of Hollywood have become ever more sophisticated, technically ever more perfect. Millions of people follow the Star Wars series with huge enthusiasm. Since 2009, the History Channel has broadcast the series Ancient Aliens. This show focuses on the visits of extraterrestrials over the millennia. Originally, there were to be 5 episodes. There are now 150. Ancient Aliens has the highest viewing figures in the history of the History Channel. A political adjustment. How is this supposed to work on a planet in which religious wars are fought, on which dictators rule their countries and are not interested in any modernization? every despot, and be he ever so cunning, registers the technical changes in the world. TV programs are broadcast via satellites. Travelers report on their experiences in other countries. The internet is flourishing everywhere. A country cannot be closed off. Even the most stupid of dictators wants to partake in modern achievements. Since the industry in his own country is incapable of producing a refrigerator or a cell phone, he has to acquire technical products from abroad, including arms. The invoices for his imported goods have to be settled with an international currency. His own national currency is of no interest whatsoever to anyone because nothing can be bought with it. The dictator has no alternative other than to fit in with international practices sooner or later. He will be taken into the UN family and has to comply with the relevant agreements. Finally, UN representatives visit his kingdom and citizens from his country travel abroad. If he continues to keep his state isolated, the homemade revolution becomes inevitable. The zeitgeist overcomes every dictatorship. Most industrialized nations foster democracy, and their representatives never tire of recommending this form of government to everyone else. However, a popular democracy, as it is practiced in Switzerland, for example, is not feasible internationally. In a democracy, the majority wins and the minority acquiesces to this dictate without dispute or indeed war. But this requires, before anything else, that all voters are rational. Reading and writing are the minimum requirements, and public education must have progressed to the level that the voting citizens can factually weigh up the pros and cons of a debate. Thanks to the media, the masses can be easily influenced. Does that mean clearing the way for the oligarchs, for the owners of these magical channels? Democracies have inbuilt rules to contain the power of the super rich. These rules work, more or less. What would happen if an ET allied themselves with a rich family and persuaded these super-capitalists to publicize an embassy of the extraterrestrials through the media controlled by the rich family? There might even be an arrangement. The rich person is given some unique technical know-how by the ET, which he could patent and manufacture in his industries, making the family even richer. And what is the benefit for the ET? They've broken the rules that their species agreed with another group. Other rich people, or also the military or states, could attack the exposed oligarch, scorn his product, call him internationally to order. His freedom to travel and that of his staff could be restricted, his accounts frozen, and so on. The super-rich family would also have to fit in. It, more than others, knows the international conventions, and it, too, wants to be a respected member of human society. The ET would have no benefit from going it alone. Intergalactic rules might even apply in the universe, something like a Milky Way UN, which prohibits individual ETs from taking up contact with individuals on another planet. Perhaps the ET would risk being excluded from their community. They could be isolated and cut off from their technical bases. If everything is so complicated, with whom are the extraterrestrials supposed to establish contact? Apparently, their technological superiority may not be used. A destroyed planet is of no use to them, and they can find raw materials for free in the solar system. An agreement may not be concluded with just a single nation, because the nation concerned would immediately have an advantage over the others. Single persons may not be given an advantage, and even if such a person received exclusive and valuable information, they would not be taken seriously by public opinion. With whom, for all the world, are the ETs supposed to communicate? Who is left? Intelligent people who have the competence to convene a body committed to silence. Thanks to its awareness of its responsibility, such a group would be suitable for judging the consequences of a contact. Precisely, this variant is currently happening. The ETs are supposed to prepare humanity mentally, culturally, politically, and organizationally for their visit? but they have to start somewhere. This has been happening since Fatima in 1917. For decades, they have shown themselves intermittently. The Earthlings called it UFOs. Reasonable people shrugged their shoulders and at best laughed about it. But the number of occasions grew. Stupid and clever books about UFOs were published, and intellectual giants and simple workers were among the people affected. The UFO literature grew into millions. And then there were encounters of the third and fourth kind. ETs conversed with humans and even invited them into their spaceships. There are authenticated reports about that. This was followed by the kidnapping of individual people. Down-to-earth scientists cried indignantly, "Stop this nonsense! Intolerable!" But the nonsense only lasted until it was scientifically verified, because the ETs had given some of their victims implants, and they could be surgically removed and physically and chemically analyzed. There was scientific verification, at least for those who were seriously interested in knowing. Year after year, ever bigger international UFO conferences were convened, attended by thousands, including an increasing number of scientists. For decades, I tended to see myself as an opponent of the UFO community. Too much nonsense was being peddled. Then, after meeting some wonderful people, including some extraordinary personalities, I gradually had to revise my opinion. That is what I wrote in the first chapter of my last book about five UFO cases that definitively cannot be proved wrong. I knew all the eyewitnesses personally, and when someone has delved so deeply into the subject, has taken the opposing arguments of the skeptics into account, then someone like me can no longer keep silent. We are called upon to show the courage of our convictions. But how, in what form, did the first extraterrestrials contact individual scientists? Did they appear to them like angels in a dream, storm into their bedrooms at night like goblins? Did they disguise themselves as speaking dogs or clever parrots? After the ETs had quietly and secretly kidnapped individual Earthlings, samples of sperm and ovum were taken from them. Human extraterrestrials were created. That is the people about whom Canada's ex-defense minister said, "Some of the extraterrestrials look like us and could walk down the street without anyone noticing." The comprehensive knowledge of these ambassadors impressed every scientist who had been contacted to such an extent that they, to use a colloquial expression, could have been knocked over with a feather. These brilliant people who were taken into the confidence of the aliens are aware of their responsibility toward humanity. Inevitably, secret groups formed. That is how it works in human society. And of course, the group of people contacted wanted something in return from the ETs. We simply cannot change our spots. The group, accordingly, tried to negotiate. That might have gone something like this. "We accept your presence, and we will protect your anonymity until the majority of people can digest the existence of extraterrestrials without panicking. How about, in return, showing us some tiny aspect of your phenomenal technology?" In a next step, it is contractually agreed that the acquired knowledge may only be used for the benefit of humanity as a whole, an agreement that both parties must comply with. Earth people are aware of the terrible reaction of their fellow humans if the ETs were to appear over sold-out football stadiums. The extraterrestrials, equally so. And furthermore, a destroyed planet and freaked-out humanity would be of no use to them. In the worst case of a breach of the agreement, the extraterrestrials could still use the threat of their arms. So within a short period of time, an earthly UFO has been built in a super-secret facility, which could just as well fly to the stars as its extraterrestrial model. How did Dr. Benjamin Robert Rich, the director of the Lockheed Skunk Works, in which the stealth bomber was developed, put it? "We already have the possibility of flying to the stars. Whatever you can imagine, we know how it works. We have the technology to bring E.T. home. No, it will not require a lifetime to do it. We know how it works. We could have the opportunity to fly to the stars. The U.S. astronaut Edgar Mitchell is of the same opinion. Not all UFOs are in fact extraterrestrial in origin. Some of them are our own development. But we are by no means at the technological level of those who visit us. Why does every American government class dramatic UFO sightings, unmistakable overflights of its own territory reported by pilots, as harmless? Is it simply what the skeptics claim, that no one, neither a U.S. Defense Secretary nor any reasonable scientist, takes the subject seriously? UFOs and everything associated with them are baloney, total nonsense, a figment of the imagination? And the people with their objective warnings are misled and should not be taken seriously? Sorry, the problem is the reverse. The skeptics and the reasonable people who want to stand with both feet on the ground are uninformed. They do not know what is going on. Every person, without exception, whom I quoted at the beginning of this chapter, was originally a skeptic. None of them considered UFOs to be an extraterrestrial reality before then. All of them stood on the ground of alleged reason until they were initiated. And it requires effort to get to this information. It does not just drop into a person's lap. After all, we are still dealing with well-guarded secrets intended to prevent humanity from going mad. Meanwhile, however, UFOs have been recorded by all military systems. There is a wealth of outstanding radar and visual data, clear statements from fighter pilots and Air Force generals internationally. And none of these witnesses are a sandwich short of a picnic. None of them are crackpots. None of them are irresponsible. Yet the U.S. government does not see the slightest danger to national security. When, however, a foreign aircraft, which could be shot down immediately, crosses the U.S. border, national security is invoked without ado. There could not be a clearer indication of the existence of a secret agreement than the downright absurdly indifferent behavior of the U.S. authorities with regard to UFOs. Woe betide any Russian aircraft or foreign submarine violating American sovereign territory. All hell immediately breaks loose, including in the media. Yet UFOs do not exist, even though hundreds of them have been documented and nailed down both electronically and visually. Because the right hand does not know what the left hand is doing, the authorities tie themselves up in exquisite knots. The announcement is made that UFOs do not exist, yet the U.S. Department of Transportation published a memo for pilots on February 9, 2012, titled Section 8, Unidentified Flying Objects, UFO Reports. It tells pilots where they should report UFO sightings, specifically to Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies, BAS, and provides a telephone number and email address. Long before that, the Ministry of Defense, MOD, informed its staff of the following on June 24, 1965. Our policy is to downplay the subject of UFOs and to avoid attaching undue attention or publicity to it. As long ago as 1953, when UFO sightings were slowly coming into fashion, the CIA, the U.S. Secret Service, issued the following guidelines in the Robertson Panel Report. All authorities in the Secret Service network are encouraged to influence the mass media for the purpose of debunking and infiltrate civilian UFO research groups. UFO reports should be made implausible and ridiculous. Public interest in UFO events should be expressly undermined, and Secret Service agents should ensure that the facts are withheld from leading researchers through targeted disinformation. There is no other word for this than conspiracy. By the authorities. Period. And the present shows how the instructions of the CIA were followed and carried out worldwide. Anyone who wants to be taken seriously thinks UFOs are nonsense. Presumably, the ETs would prefer to negotiate with a world government that is responsible for the whole of humanity. But such a body does not exist on Earth, although some groups are working hard to achieve it. That leaves the UN. In this case, the discussion would have to be with UN delegates, and at some point the UN General Assembly would have to be involved. That, presumably, is the long-term goal. At the present time, however, pure suicide. ETs before the UN, and the eggs would be broken. Total panic. The ETs could simply ignore our concerns and interfere when and where they wanted. They could impose their legal order on us and totally disregard parliaments and the UN. That would be dictatorship, with the kind of consequences already discussed. The same applies to a kind of protectorate. Claudio Stella considers it feasible that the Earth could become the protectorate of an intergalactic community. That would be impossible without the political will of the Earth community, UN. It would ultimately be no different to an ET dictatorship. But now the aliens want something from us. I will get to that. The Earth, or we human beings, must possess something that is of interest to the others. With a dictatorship out of the running, that only leaves negotiation. But negotiations do not work anywhere in the universe without a legal basis. The aliens know their law, and we know ours, as do countries all around the world. They all have laws of their own. But there is also the superior law of the world community. A consensus will have to be found. Ultimately, it will come down to human beings expecting a lot more from aliens than the ETs expect from us.